This is Rakalix After Hours.
Welcome, everybody, and of course, thank you for tuning in to our music and technology podcast. Alas, the fate, the great fate, has befallen us, and we've had to do a remote one, like we used to do those couple of times before it got so irritating we bailed on it. Do you remember what those were like, Pete? You're remembering it now.
I'm certainly remembering it now. I'm having massive amounts of deja vu.
And they're not good, not pleasant memories. I think we've spoken about our unfortunate time with Caster before, and I think other solutions. Maybe even
yes.
That amazing patchwork that you did with Telmo that one time. But more importantly, what have you been doing this week? I don't imagine it's been fun.
No, basically it's been COVID followed by some more COVID and then a little bit of touch of COVID.
Oh, has it? It's got you then.
Yes. After 2.5 years, I thought I had escaped. Most probably was getting quite, I don't know, not lax in my precautions or anything like that. Just a bit complacent, I suppose. And then it got me, and it got me good, which was also a bit of a shocker as well, because I had been lulled into a false sense of security because they were saying the latest, whatever the latest strain of coronavirus was, it was milder than the original one, and all you mostly heard about was reports of people having it maybe for a couple of days and a bit of a sniffle and et cetera, et cetera. I can categorically state that's not what I had.
Oh dear.
Yes.
Oh dear indeed.
So to some degree still have, but I believe I'm on the mend.
Good news. Though, of course, I can only hear you through an unfortunate internet contraption. You sound relatively normal to me. It doesn't seem to have affected the vocal cords too much.
That side of it seems to have resolved itself. I'm still feeling a bit clammy and a bit of a cough, sort of headache in the mornings and that type of thing. It was last week when I had the full-on, felt like I'd been stabbed in various muscles and
oh, wow.
Really bad headache and really sore throat and a really dry cough. It was classic, other than the one thing I have escaped in the respect of symptoms, I didn't lose my sense of taste and smell, as far as I'm aware.
Mm.
And also, it was rather, dare I say, I don't want to be too gross, quite snotty in parts. But the worst of it is the fatigue.
Gotcha.
Which seems to be the overarching thing that just wipes you out. Just felt really kind of,
Yeah, I imagine that means you've basically done nothing aside from tend to your wounds.
I did have to force myself to edit last week's podcast.
Of course, the machine.
Which I did. Yeah, I did it later in the week, but it was a real trial by ordeal. I just didn't want to be sitting in the studio at all. I just wanted to be ensconced in bed with my iPad on my lap, trying to forget how miserable I was. And it wasn't just the unwellness that was not pleasant. It was the, I know that it's not mandatory now, but it was basically the isolation.
Yeah.
It started getting really tedious. I was quite keen that I didn't pass it on to anyone, and I was quite worried that I might already have passed it on, because obviously I was in contact with yourself and several other people prior to my positive test. And at that stage, I just had a little bit of a itchy throat and thought it might have been a little bit of hay fever or something like that. It wasn't till the day after that it really kind of came down on me.
Again, it seems I have escaped, even though this is a confirmed contact.
Well, no one else in the house acquired it from me and has subsequently come down with any symptoms. So I believe I'm getting to the point where I'm not infectious, although I'm still testing positive. But I believe that you can test positive for quite a substantial amount of time after you've been infected. And even when I do go back into public, I'll be wearing a N95 mask on a continuous basis until I'm absolutely 100% clear of it.
Gotcha. You've said before that listening back to our early episodes is something of a retrospective diary, in a way, of the development of the whole situation. But it's taken 2 and some years before it actually got you. Yeah, that's quite impressive. So well done for avoiding it for so long.
One thing I have been doing, as I've had a lot of time on my hands, and once I started feeling somewhat better, was that I had made a decision that I was going to try and migrate some of my completed work that was fully formed in the box.
I think I see where this is going.
And I thought, why don't I try and migrate some of these tracks into hardware?
Mm-hmm.
So the initial concept was quite good. I thought, well, I can get the project up in Cubase. I can break it down. I can look and see, well, those are the MIDI parts and those are samples. It's all a case of deciding how to and what to actually migrate. So whether I just migrate the MIDI information to some parts that it has to be the actual original samples or sounds, which I can easily do. And then it's which piece of equipment would most suit that particular part.
Thinking about full tracks, of course, your note-based synthesizer options are multifarious. What about your drum machines and percussion situation? I can't think what you've got to hand apart from a Digitact on a pedal board.
And a 1010 Music Black Box.
Oh, I forgot that was still hanging around.
Yes, so that was the intended recipient of a lot of the information initially.
Right.
That would be the first stage. So can I transfer the various parts that make up the particular track I want to migrate from the door, and can I move it lock, stock and barrel in component form into the black box? And so far I haven't got that far.
Have you mostly just been analysing the tracks and coming back to them, remembering how they all fit together?
Yes, so that was the start, trying to get the actual tracks to run. Now I've got 3 versions of Cubase currently running on my system. I've got 8.5, which a lot of stuff was done on. And subsequently to that, I've also got version 10 and more recently version 12. In theory, your older tracks should run in the newer version of the door. The problem I've had is with plugins that the door or the newer door doesn't want to recognize. Case in point, the main thing that it was struggling to recognize was Native Instruments.
Those will be a bit important. There's probably quite a lot in there.
Yes, there is. But not all Native Instruments. After a fashion, once I'd had a fiddle around, version 12 of Cubase would actually see Massive and Kontakt, but it won't see Battery 4.
That's just rude.
I know. As per normal, when you launch into something quite creative or relatively creative, it's not new music, but it's a creative process. I just got into the doldrums of technical issues, just the grind of why is this not working? And you go from being quite inspired, quite energized, quite enthusiastic to spending hours just reading user groups and lots of things in user groups that are many people having the same problem but with no solutions following on, or nothing that usable following on. I mean, there is always a learning curve and you get into some of the nuances, but starting to wonder whether it's a mismatch between the door version and the Native Instrument version, although I've got a really quite recent version of Complete Ultimate, and I've got the version before the current version. And no matter what I've done so far, Cubase refuses to find battery. It's like it's not there. But if I go to an older version of Cubase, it's perfectly happy with battery. I set out to have a creative session and I just ended up with technical issues.
Thwarted by the myriad technological doobries that go into quite... I imagine your projects are quite expansive.
Yes. I mean, the particular one I wanted to do was quite a clean project, 4 minutes approximately, and should be pretty straightforward to translate because the core beat is pretty straightforward and it can be programmed in standard XOXO type programming. Then there's a little bit of a rhythmic loop, which I can paste over the top. And then there's some other loops and bits and pieces and some synthy stuff, which I want to get some real synth doing it.
I guess this is the kind of corner where the people that make a MIDI part, they're like, yeah, I'm happy with that. And then just immediately bounce down some audio to then process that. They'll be laughing now.
Yeah.
But those of us who cling to the eternal flexibility of having MIDI lanes everywhere are scuppered when these software things happen.
I could render out all the stems and chop it all up and put it all into the black box of samples. I want it to be more extensive than that. I intend this for performance.
Yeah, it was more from a reviving old projects perspective, because it just makes it easier to actually listen to things when you don't have to worry about plugins just never loading.
And as I've said over the last few weeks, I want to migrate away from all plugins and have nothing but hardware. I'm still having to rely on a computer. I'm not suggesting that I'm going to go for a non-DAW type of recording setup, but I do want to ditch a lot of the instrument plugins and effects plugins, basically all plugins.
Yeah. So if you're ditching effects, would that mean you're going to sort of do a bit of creative sound sculpting on the way in, or even mixing in on an analog desk? Oh, shock horror.
No, I would have the effects set up as external effects, external outboard, and loop them through the audio interface.
Right, and that way...
So basically have all my various effects running as outboard. Even though the mixer is essentially virtual inside the RME, the actual effects would be real and tangible.
Yeah, and then you would be left with just a purely audio project and you'd be freed from these problems, in theory.
Yes, I know it's not necessarily the solution and one should just knuckle down and try and fix these problems, but I find they're so debilitating in respect to trying to get music done that I'm just going to abandon the plugins.
I think that's fair enough, to be honest. They were bold lines indeed, but we must move on. Because I had a thought before I fill you in on my week. On every techie kind of forum that has ever existed, I'm sure there will be a show off your rig type thread. And I've been reading the Tiny Studio Corner thread on the Lines forum recently. But since we've had another virtual occasion today, and I cycled in, so I didn't have my laptop, my rig is quite strange. Let me run you through it, because it's kind of funny. So, the SM7B. Of course, I actually brought in my FET head on the bike. That made it in. I've borrowed the officer's Zoom H6. That's working, and it is USB'd into the wall for power. And then it is Zoom on my phone for our video conferencing thing, on a stand, on a stack of G Technology hard drives from about 6 or 8 years ago. You know the ones, Pete, that have been sitting around these sofas for ages. So you're on a little elevated tower. So you can see me at eye level.
Yeah, those phone mounts or tripod jobs are quite effective, I find.
Yeah, this one I borrowed from a colleague, little phone grabber, which has worked nicely. But my week, squash, because of course it's squash all the time, more squash. I did, in fact, injure myself. Oh no! I think only for the second time in my sporting career I did sustain an injury. I managed to pull sort of the inner part of my right quad just above the knee right at the end of a match, which I'm going to say, I was going to win it. And then I didn't. So, yeah, frustrating. But it made walking upstairs next to impossible with my right leg, so I kind of had to hop for a few days. But that seems to have resolved itself now. It wasn't quite fixed, and then I decided to cycle to work. So thankfully it was fixed, and here we are. I am recovering.
It's more of what I was warning you about last week, because you stated that you wanted to possibly achieve the level of fitness that you had when you were much younger. And alas, this is another thing that happens as you get older, is your propensity to injure is much greater.
Indeed. And despite heeding the advice of my partner, who is a personal trainer, well, is qualified. I don't think she actually has done any personal training for a while. But she has said, pay attention to your warm-ups. Do your dynamic stretches before you play and your static stretches afterwards. I haven't paid attention at all. And as you've said, Pete, the younger people who are indestructible, it doesn't really matter. But alas, I have escaped the indestructible portion of my youth. And yes, I had to awkwardly ask for injury time in a match and borrow someone's foam roller and try and rescue the situation, but it didn't work. Bit of a shame. But the other part of my week, I went to a sale at Wizard Works. Now, Wizard Works are a boutique London-based bike bag manufacturer, and they are just about as hipstery as you would expect. But I got some deals. So they were selling off sort of prototype designs and bags that they made for shows that were in fancy colours and things like that. And I now have a nicely colour-coordinated commuting bike bag setup, which is very pleasing to me, in the black and multicoloured splatter situation. All for a lot less money than they would cost normally. Hooray! Let us move into the world of synthy news. There are a few things, one of which is super cool. on Thonk, I think they're available now, but you can buy a large 1U display for your Disting EX. So if you want clearer visuals on that screen, you can get a little kit going and make it work. So I think it's PCB only and you have to source the parts yourself at the moment, which is a little bit of a faff, but it's a 1U screen. And what I'm going to have to do now is grab Pete from the phone stand. So he's going to get a bit seasick as I do as my phone moves around. Let me grab the internet so I can tell you how many it is. Okay, so the Expert Sleepers 1U display PCB for the low, low price of £6.50 ex VAT. I'm on 14 HP in the IntelliGel format. So you just got to grab the screen itself, and there's a few headers and miscellaneous bits and pieces, but you essentially attach it to the back of your Disting EX. And let's get a kind of eyeball on this. Probably somewhere between 4 to 6 times the size of the original display. Now, the EX is a million times better than the original Disting's dot matrix situation, which is just a pain to read, but it's still tiny. So this is quite a cool idea. And if you are in for the DIY, I'm glad they've made that available for you. Brilliant stuff, should you need it. Now, I complained loudly. Was it last episode? No, I think it was the one before. Maybe it's last one. Either way, about the sort of announcement live stream that Make Noise did for the XPO and the demos being lackluster and not very exciting. Well, my prayers have been answered with sounds of the Make Noise XPO available on their YouTube channel, and it is much more juicy. So I recommend you go and check it out again if you are interested in stereo oscillatorifying goodness. And there were some pretty cool patches involving the stereo wave folding. We do like it. Now, my favorite thing that I've found this week is the Synthlux Academy Simple. So, Synthlux Academy are a bunch of peeps that thought, we want to help people out if they want to be designing their own synthy type stuff. Synthlux Academy are a community of people that decided they wanted to solve this problem. So what they've come out with is, well, there's a few versions of the kit, I'll get into it later, but it's a PCB with 80 slots for switches, potentiometers. I don't know that there's much support for jacks in the modular kind of sense. I think there might be an input and an output. And this PCB lets you move these around, plug them in wherever you like, and it's all controlled by something like a Teensy or an Arduino Nano kind of microcontroller. And you can basically build your own synth on this. Now, they're doing it in a really cool way, which isn't just putting the kit out there and, you know, doing whatever. But they've got a few different options, which I will illustrate for you now. So you can just get the DIY PCB option and source your own stuff for £39 from Thonk. Or if you go direct to Synthlux Academy, there are a couple of bundles. I think they're pretty cool. Simply Brainless is €159 for the PCB and some components, but you need to grab your own microcontroller. Or Simply Packed gives you loads of components, the Daisy Seed as a microcontroller, and both of those bundles come with lifetime access to the upcoming video courses that Synthlux Academy are putting out to teach you how to code your own synthesizer and build your own, I guess, it's a UI, but it's a physical one. An interface. A physical interface. A touchy thing with pots and knobs and stuff. And if you get into it, of course, it can sound however you want. You can use whatever synth engine you could desire. What a cool idea. It may be Eurorack compatible as well, I think around 42 HP-ish, but I don't think that's really the point. But it's super cool, and I'm all about it. Synthlux Academy. Simple. Go and check it out. There are a few videos on YouTube. Of course, we must end. But not before the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. Yes. Or alternatively, what has Pete found on YouTube this week?
Right, this week there's a little channel I wanted to tell everyone about, and it's entitled Gazelle Automation. Now, they're a little animation studio out of Toronto, Canada, and what initially caught my eye when I first spotted them was that they had animated various parts of episodes of Star Trek Next Generation and also Star Trek Voyager.
Aha.
What they've actually done, they've sort of done them in the style of the Star Trek series, which I think was early 70s, and it's the cartoon version of the original series voiced by the original actors, but with relatively basic cartoon animation for the visuals. And so they've taken select scenes from Next Generation and Voyager and animated those in that style. Cool. I would imagine that's a way of showing off their skills. They've gone on to produce other stuff which is puppetry based. So that's one of their other type of skill sets. And they've got their own character and everything that goes with that character. And I believe it's also available on YouTube on one of the children's channels. And the character is called Milkshi, I believe. It's M-I-K-S-H-I.
Sounds yeah, very I've got Japanese. No ideas on those pronunciations there, but interesting.
Do some of the episodes, but there's also quite a lot of bits and pieces on there. There's not a massive amount of videos, but they are relatively interesting. If you're into either puppetry animation, hand-drawn animation, or even stop motion, that type of thing. So that is my multimedia recommendation for this week, the YouTube channel Gazelle Automation.
Wonderful stuff. I have been attempting to understand the world of colour a little bit better. You may remember my confusion about my film scanning process and the colour considerations. I just watched a really good video by Film Riot, a very well-established YouTube channel, but this one is called Color Grading 101, Everything You Need to Know. And it was a really good breakdown of the kind of professional color correction, color grading process, and a lot of the technical jargon that comes with it. So if you, like me, need to understand color better, go find Film Riot and go and watch Color Grading 101, Everything You Need to Know. That'll be the end of another Rack Addicts After Hours. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we hope you come back for the next one. Farewell!